What do you think is going on pathophysiologically, both with the voice change as well as the nosebleeds?
Well, you know, certainly we know that the blood vessels in the nasal mucosa are very close to the surface. It's why people with high blood pressure get nosebleeds. And I suspect that even fairly modest changes in the vasculature could predispose some people to nosebleeds. Then you also can get into the fact that hypertension is a side effect from bevacizumab, and maybe slight changes in the blood pressure in addition to changes in the vasculature might lead to that. It's not really a toxicity, so it doesn't fall on the CTC adverse event thing, but people have noticed, in other studies, have noticed some of those voice changes. I think ovarian cancer may be a disease that's particularly well-suited to targeting the vasculature for a couple of reasons. Number one is we know that there are probably some autocrine or paracrine growth factor pathways that are active in ovarian cancer, and probably the three growth factor pathways that have been best studied or best documented are the vascular endothelial growth factor, VEGF pathway, epidermal growth factor, EGF pathway, and the platelet-derived growth factor. And what I mean by that is that we see overexpression of the receptor and we see secretion of the ligand. And interestingly, in ovarian cancer, we've seen a straight line correlation between surgical debulking and survival. And there's no other solid tumors where we see that. And I suspect that in part that's because you're interrupting that autocrine or paracrine growth factor loop, so that why would removing disease in the pelvis affect the growth of disease in the upper abdomen? That would certainly be an explanation for that. The second is that it's interesting because we actually looked at this in both malignant ascites and malignant effusions, pleural effusions, is that it turns out that malignant effusions, almost no matter what the disease is, are very VEGF dependent. And even in lung cancer, some people feel like when we have an assay, a reliable clinical assay for VEGF, that you may be able to use that to diagnose a malignant from a non-malignant effusion almost better than cytology. And so for some reason, that sort of finding either of carcinomatosis or, you know, that miliary type of disease spread, perhaps maybe particularly dependent on VEGF. So certainly it seems like in ovarian cancer, there are reasons why interrupting that pathway is important. I think another in ovarian cancer is that, you know, we have a pretty unique pattern of spread of disease. And certainly while ovarian cancer can spread via the lymphatics or via the bloodstream, most of the disease, you know, 90%+ of the disease you're going to find is from basically shedding of cells into the peritoneal cavity, sitting on peritoneal or mesenteric surfaces and growing. And that potentially requires a different sort of vasculature or a neoangiogenesis than a more typical pattern of spread via the bloodstream or via the lymphatics. And so ovarian cancer may be, because of that pattern of spread, much more dependent on the vasculature.
It's really interesting what you're saying about the ascites and pleural effusion, because also as I'm starting to interview investigators, and I can recall a patient, Mari Markman, who told me about on our last issue, who seems to have a really good response to persistent ascites with bevacizumab. But this question of, is it just the pure anti-tumor effect, or is there something about VEGF or vasculature that's going on here?
Yeah, and I think it's very difficult to answer that question. We have seen some people in ovarian cancer who have responded based on basically resolution or significant clearance of their ascites without a significant change in the sort of volume of their solid tumors. So although they may not need a paracentesis every week now, they don't, quote, meet the response criteria for a trial, but from a quality of life perspective, et cetera, they've clearly had a benefit.